my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Hey, wrestling fans. Welcome to episode 72 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. We are recording on location in Dallas, Texas. Site, of course, of WrestleMania 32, the Hall of Fame, NXT TakeOver Dallas. Chad and I making our return to the big event after a one-year hiatus. I guess that's the right way to say that. I don't know. What do you think? Was it a hiatus or a mini break?
I think it was just a mini break, but I think, and we'll get more into this later, but we can actually say finally we have come back to WrestleMania and it actually means something.
That's true. One of the many things that we are going to nitpick, and I think part of this podcast is going to be nitpicky.
I'll throw it out right now. And it may be because we're recording this at 1 in the morning. It's been a very, very long day. And there's a lot of stuff that I don't want to say fed up, because the stuff we're going to be hitting is stuff we've talked about ad nauseum for months on end. But it's just, I think WrestleMania could have been a better show than it was, and it's all in the small details. And I'm going to be addressing more of those than the bigger picture, I guess.
And before we get to all that, we're going to briefly talk about our adventures here in Dallas. We went Thursday night. I arrived Thursday, and we checked out the NWA Parade of Champions show, which was a pretty good show. A lot of indie talent, some blasts from the past with World Class. Unfortunately, we didn't stay for the whole show, in part because I had been up since midnight the night before, and it was just a very long day already, so we kind of checked out early and got ready for Friday, which included, I'll save the Neville story for another time, or a podcast, or a blog or something, but we went to the NXT TakeOver show, which was pretty good. To me, it wasn't like some of the other NXT shows of the past. The big three things, I guess, that happened, in my opinion, or I guess there were more than three things, but Asuka, and I think I'm saying her name right.
Asuka,
I'm sorry. As Chad said, it is late or early as we are recording this. The new NXT Women's Champion. Then, of course, Samoa Joe bleeding like a stuck pig in the main event against Finn Balor. Finn Balor retaining the championship. We also saw the official debut of Nakamura. And Bobby Roode sitting in the audience too, presumably a part of NXT now as well. Overall thoughts, Chad, of NXT TakeOver?
I thought NXT was an NXT show. Going into it, figured it would be the show of the weekend. I think it lived up to that hype. And there wasn't, the worst match on the show, which in my opinion was Baron Corbin versus Austin Aries. It's not that it was a bad match. Mm-hmm. It's just when you're looking at NXT, there's so much good action there that something has to be the worst match of the night. And that just happened to be it.
Yeah. New tag team champions as well. I forgot to mention that. And, I'm not making excuses, but my mind is blank right now.
The only thing that I can say for NXT show is I do not follow Japanese wrestling, so I don't know Nakamura. Everybody else in the arena apparently does follow Japanese, and we're highly excited to see him debut. I think he looked fine. I am not a fan of the strong style.
Nor am I.
Style, I guess. But, I mean, his match with Sami Zayn was good. I think he's going to do well at NXT. I don't know how well he will translate to the main roster. You know, hopefully he does well. But,
yeah.
I'll be curious to see where he goes from here.
And speaking of the main roster, I don't think anything officially has been said, but presumably, especially the crowd reaction to Sami Zayn, may have been his last NXT show. Thoughts on that?
I think it's time if you're going to have Sami move up. I mean, obviously by being in a match, in a high profile match at WrestleMania, you know, it's time. I think it's time for Sami to move on from NXT. Yeah, I think it probably was his, and I don't know what they taped at NXT at Access, but I would say, yeah, it's probably a good bet that was his swan song.
Now, Hall of Fame, we really went into depth about the Hall of Fame in last week's episode, episode 71, so not a whole lot more to say. I mean, we agreed on the inductees and talked about all that. I think, and we probably are on the same page here, to be quite blunt, there was an asshole sitting behind us at the Hall of Fame, and I apologize for the language, but this guy was an asshole, a douchebag, whatever you want to call him. He was griping about every speech. It was too long. It was too this. It was too that. To me, it was like, dude, why were you even here?
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of detracted a little bit from the overall meaning of the night, which to me, the Hall of Fame is a night to be respectful and listen and not be, you know, a douchebag.
Yeah, he was bad, but I'm also going to call out pretty much 98% of this audience. If you are listening to this, if you're at the Hall of Fame and you fall into this category, I am not apologizing for what I'm about to say. If you are planning on attending a future Hall of Fame ceremony, I want you to keep this in mind. The Hall of Fame is not a wrestling event. It is a night to pay respect to those whose careers warrant induction into said Hall of Fame. This is not a casual event. You do not wear t-shirts, jeans, and anybody wearing shorts that night is a classless idiot.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you have to go to the nines dressed up, but when we got to the American Airlines Center for the Hall of Fame, I actually double-checked my ticket because the crowd that was going in made me think that I was in the wrong place.
Yeah, this was the worst year, I think, for that too.
Yeah, yeah. I would say 97% of the people there were wearing a wrestling t-shirt and jeans. And it's just, I can't comprehend how you do not understand that this is not a typical show.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, our first ceremony was in 06, 10 years ago now, and I think it even said on the ticket that you had to wear nice clothes. I don't remember how they worded it, but it's definitely just a show of respect. And speaking of that, there was something different. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna, and in that regard, too, it is not a show for you to chant things, cheer, catchphrases. It is, and I think WWE kind of made the mistake in that regard this year with having New Day induct the Freebirds, because even their actions kind of gave the crowd a chance to clap along.
Yeah.
And I think that sets the bad precedence. This is a night to be respectful, and I know that it probably makes a lot of money selling tickets, but I honestly, as much as I enjoy hearing these stories, I would not fault WWE forever turning this into just a network exclusive show and not selling tickets to fans, because the fans do. And this year it wasn't as bad, other than the guy sitting behind us.
Yeah.
But in years past, it's, again, it's class and it's respect. And I think those are two things that, sadly, the reason wrestling fans have a certain stereotype, sometimes it is reinforced at this event.
Yeah, and speaking of class, WWE did a Legacy Wing. Is that what they're calling
Legacy,
it?
Legacy, yes.
They didn't really do an induction ceremony, but there were a handful of wrestlers, men and women, or one woman, from the past, who are no longer with us. And it was a quick little video montage package, kind of highlighting each one of those participants. So I thought that was a classy way to get some people in that probably would have not otherwise been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and especially since, as you said, most of them have passed on. It's also a lot of people that I think probably are unfamiliar to today's audience. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a, I mean, I, one of my issues with the Hall of Fame is when you put in a dead wrestler and have their family there, no disrespect to that family. And this year we had Boss Man's family and Ray Gordy and, or Terry Bam Bam Gordy's son, Ray, and mm-hmm. Buddy Jack Roberts' son. But fans don't know them.
Right.
They don't have that connection to them, and so their speeches are not usually paid attention to as well. So, yeah. Especially, and then if you add wrestlers that were popular 70 years ago, you know. So, yeah, I think the way WWE handled that was very well done.
I agree. You ready to talk about the Big Show? And I don't mean Paul White.
I would probably rather spend time talking about the Big Show than talk about WrestleMania, because I will start off by saying the disclaimer, being there live, the atmosphere adds to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a good atmosphere. And I actually said, you know, on the way back to the hotel tonight that this time I was the douchebag jackass person in our section.
And I don't think you were that. You
were
I
mean,
bad.
I was more, I kept most of my comments mainly to where only you could hear them, and I was doing it to you. But it was, I don't want to say I hated this show, but I think there was a lot wrong with it. I think this show, what's the word I'm looking for, encapsulates everything that is wrong with WWE booking.
Folks, if you ever watch The Simpsons and you remember the episode of the newspaper clipping of Grandpa waving his fist at the clouds, the angry man yells at cloud.
That's
going to
be
Chad.
Me. That's me tonight.
Because, and I don't think we're going to argue, but we're going to disagree on this podcast, which I think is a good thing. We normally typically get along, and not that we don't get along, but we normally agree a lot. I didn't hate the show. There were parts of it as well that I thought, this is part of the problem. But I see why they did it, and I didn't hate the show by any means. So overall, we'll start off with that. I did not hate the show. I thought, you know, because it was such a crazy day, and it took forever to get in there, and I think they had problems with the ticket scanners or whatnot. We missed two of the matches. We missed the 10
And we say missed in the sense that
we didn't watch
them. We didn't
them.
See them. Yeah. I don't know if we actually missed them, but
the Divas match, the 10 Diva match, and I don't know, are they called Divas anymore because it's now the women's championship?
I don't know. Well, it was the Total Divas show. So.
And I don't even know who won the match.
I think the Total Divas team,
okay,
but I'm not sure.
And then, of course, Kalisto defending the U.S. title against Ryback. And I'll be honest, too, I don't think I picked any winners from the previous podcast. So we missed those two matches right off the bat. We got there for the Usos versus the Dudleys. The Usos win that one.
And this was a match that during the match itself, even though there were probably at the time at least 80,000 fans in the building, you could hear a pin drop and a pinfall during this match. The only thing that was over in this match were the tables at the end.
Yeah.
And this is the booking, I believe, if I'm correct, is the Dudleys have said they're not going to do tables anymore. They're shaving the tables. But then after the match is over, after the Usos won, the Dudleys grabbed tables and were going to put the Usos through them before the Usos reversed it and put them through tables. And it's like, why, if you're going to do that as a finish, why not make it a tables match to make it the Dudleys, you know, specialty?
Right.
It just, I don't know. I mean, I don't really care about either one of these teams, which, maybe, I don't know if that says more about the way their WWE tag team booking is or if just my personal taste, but this was the start of what I would consider bad booking for the show.
Show opened with, or I guess once the fireworks and America the Beautiful went down and all that good stuff, things started off with the Intercontinental title match, the ladder match, which I thought was top-notch.
Yeah.
There were a lot of great, crazy spots. I loved Stardust tribute to Dusty Rhodes with not only his costume, but then pulling out the polka-dotted ladder. I don't have any complaints about it. I was surprised, as I think you were as well, Zack Ryder winning it as Broski of the Week, episode 22. Check it out. On Long Island IC. I was happy to see Zach win. I don't know that this is going to be a long-term deal for him. He was the last-minute substitute for Neville, who injured his ankle a few weeks ago on Raw. So it's curious to see what's next for this whole storyline.
Yeah, I think, and this will be my nitpicking, this Zack Ryder winning, I have no problem with. It was a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, he was a replacement, as you said. So what was the original booking for this match? And going forward, do they have a plan laid out of what they're going to do with Zach's title reign?
Yeah.
And that's if they're playing this by ear, you know, just coming up with something on the day of the show, I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
But as you said, the match itself, lots of crazy spots, a lot of good action. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, you know, went after each other, but were kept away and didn't play necessarily into the finish. So I think you've still got that feud that you can build onto. Yeah, I think, sadly, I think this is where the show peaked.
Yeah.
And then it was all downhill from there. Well, I take that back. The women's title match, I will get to in half a while, also.
Yeah.
Top notch.
And maybe my guy Neville was supposed to win the Intercontinental title tonight. I mean, well, I guess we'll never really know unless somebody, you know, leaks the information. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm curious to see where Zach goes here. And especially also the Mojo Rawley thing, because they were teaming up on NXT. Yeah. As the hype bro. So, but, you know, hey, Kalisto is the U.S. champion, and he's half Lucha Dragon, so
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. And I, you know what, I don't have the list of matches in front of me, so I'm going from memory on what comes and goes here. But
Jericho AJ, I believe,
was Jericho next. AJ was next. We've talked about this before. I mean, I told Chad as the match started, and I thought it was a good match. I thought the action was great. I was not excited for it, though, because I feel like we've seen it probably, what, two or three times in the last 2.5 months.
Yeah, I think they've wrestled, I want to say three times. I want to say
it was pay-per-view, right after Raw.
On pay-per-view, on Raw, and on SmackDown.
Yeah.
And then they did the tag match. This is a match that, been there, done that. There's no feeling. I was amazed during this match, the production crew started setting up for the match following it.
Right.
And
that was distracting, I think.
That was distracting. I'm surprised the fans didn't pay more attention to the stage setup, given what was being set up.
Right.
Which was the big box of booty-os. And I was expecting a booty chant or a booty-o chant.
There was a slight one, but very small.
Or a New Day Rocks chant to break out, because God knows that was everywhere this weekend.
Yes.
This match didn't really, I couldn't get into it. And my problem was AJ losing. Because, and maybe this is, you know, maybe I'm not the good booker, but I would think AJ has the bigger future going forward. Jericho, you know, he's been at the top. Who knows how much longer he's going to be around. AJ is your new star. Give him that big win at Mania. Let him go. Now, we didn't hear the commentary.
Right.
A story that I thought of on the way home, and I've been formulating my thoughts here, is AJ in WWE world is a rookie.
Right.
This is a 100,000, you know, capacity crowd. Maybe he's nervous. Maybe he makes mistakes, and the pressure gets to him. The veteran wins the match. If that's the story they told, awesome. That's a great story, in my opinion. Or at least a plausible story.
Right.
The problem is, AJ didn't look nervous during the match. he pulled off all his signature spots with ease. So that's where the booking falls apart. I will go back and watch the show with commentary, but if they just had a straight out match, where do you go with Jericho winning, I guess?
Yeah, because, you know, Jericho, for all intents and purposes, is a part-timer. You know, he will leave again soon and go perform with Fozzy, and I'm fine with that. But there has to come a time when some of these legends, because I'll throw Jericho in the class of legends, when they come back, you know, it's time to pass that torch and get things ready. And, you know, and this is where Chad and I agree. I do think AJ should have won this match as well. I was actually stunned. I would say that might have been the biggest, for me, the biggest upset of the night was AJ winning. AJ losing. And Zach winning the Intercontinental title. But I would say that I completely missed the call on that one. And as we alluded to, the setting up the box for the Bootios led us then to a six-man. It was supposed to be a 4-on-3. It became a six-man tag match that was not for the WWE Tag Team Championship. And I think that this probably will be the area where a couple areas that I think we're going to complain. I don't know if complain is the right word, but vent the most. The match itself wasn't bad. League of Nations winning, of course, beating the New Day, which didn't rock, but it's what happened afterward that I think has a lot of people talking, Chad.
Yeah, I actually used this match as my bathroom break because, much like the Jericho-AJ match, I've seen a form of this match for the past month, and I'm just over it. Like, I don't need to see these teams face again, and especially since New Day had been getting the upper hand every time. But then at WrestleMania, League of Nations win. And I don't know if... I didn't see the finish, so I don't know if the four... You know, the number game was not in New Day's favor, and so they fell to that, if they flipped what had been happening for the last month.
I'm trying to remember exactly how it all went down, but yeah, there were some nefarious means going on.
Yeah, but then after the match, I get back in time, and I believe King Barrett was on the mic.
Yes.
And he was talking, and he said something about there's never been a trio that could stand in the same ring as League of Nations, even though you've just beat a team of trios that has been beating you for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we got the WrestleMania appearance of Shawn Michaels, Mick Foley, and Steve Austin. And my problem with this is, one, there was a rumor that came out a few weeks ago that they wanted Shawn Michaels to be the referee for the main event. And then they said when that didn't pan out, the rumor was he was going to lead a run-in with a group of legends into a random match. Why are you having a run-in in a random... Like, you're scheduling a run-in and then trying to figure out where that run-in is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it should be a logical run-in. Like, you know. The other thing is, Austin, I know that, you know, Austin and Michaels were tag team champions. Foley and Michaels were tag team champions. Or Foley and Austin were tag team champions.
Mm-hmm.
But they were never a trio of teams. So it didn't fit the group dynamic of what Barrett was saying.
Right.
And it's... When Shawn came out, I was expecting Diesel or Kevin Nash and Scott Hall to come out, since they were both in town. And, mm-hmm. you know, the click would have made a logical sense.
Right.
My problem with this, and I have no problem with these guys being on the show, and if you want to bring them out, great. I understand that fans like them, and as I have said before on this podcast, the Attitude Era ended 15 years ago. It's time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Shawn Michaels retired 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mick Foley technically retired 16 years ago. He's been back a few times. Austin, I believe, about 13 years ago was his last match. And who's left standing tall at the end of this segment?
Right.
It's the legends. It's the guys that are not going to be on Raw tomorrow or next week. They're not going to be on the pay-per-view next month. So you're sacrificing your current stars. And as I said, go back to that era, Attitude Era, and I understand there's a different time. You had competition with WCW, but, you know, WWF at the time made fun of Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Diesel, Scott Hall as being the old guys in the older generation, and it was all about the new generation. And then even when they brought them back after WCW folded, you know, Hulk Hogan didn't beat The Rock at WrestleMania when they met.
Mm-hmm.
It was focusing on the new star, and I think that is something that is completely overlooked in today's WWE.
Yeah, my first thought was, one, this makes the League of Nations look bad, but also it makes New Day look bad because, you know, they're your tag team champions. They just lost to these guys who now are getting beat up by these legends. But then when New Day came in to celebrate, I thought, oh, it's cool, they're all getting along. But then as soon as Xavier Woods started shaking his rump at Austin, I'm like, okay, this is going to end with a stunner. And I thought all three of the New Day were going to get stunned. Yeah. So, you know, at the end, it made six guys who are there, like you, or seven guys, essentially, if you throw in Barrett as well, who are there every week, who will be there every week, look bad to three guys who are legends, and like you said, I agree with that. They put them on the show somewhere. You said you had an idea of how to incorporate
and these I'll get guys to that when we get to that moment. But yeah, so yeah, I have a way that I think would have made more sense in the whole regard of WrestleMania than just throwing them out there randomly. And that's the other thing is, and this one is my very, very nitpicky pickiness. When Barrett got on the mic and started saying, you know, oh, there's no three guys, boom, Shawn Michaels' music hit. He came out dressed to fight. How did he know League of Nations was going to win, that Barrett was going to say that? Why was he standing by ready? Why were those three guys ready to come out? Like,
I liked that Austin at least came out in jeans and a t-shirt. He was not in gear.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels was like you said, ready to wrestle. He hasn't wrestled in 6 years, so why was he in his gear and ready to go? And Foley, of course, is always kind of dressed like that. So, I agree. I did notice that as well. The next match, and I'm trying to think of what you're going to pull it up on the...
No, I'll pull it up through the photos.
Okay. I want to say it was the street fight with Lesnar and Dean Ambrose. I was hoping that Dean Ambrose was going to win this. I am still a big Dean Ambrose guy. I got to tell you, though, we talked last week, and I think you had said something about, you know, kind of an Austin-esque persona with Ambrose. Tonight, or at WrestleMania, I saw more Rowdy Piper, I think, in him.
And I've heard that comparison.
So. There were, like, when he pounded on his chest at one point, and I mean, I the guy is crazy, and I think that's why he resonates with people, because he's just willing to do whatever. And of course, Brock Lesnar was Suplex City, which has become kind of a tired game too.
Yeah, ever since the Suplex City became a thing, or at least maybe I just noticed it over Brock's last two or three matches, all he does is suplex. And it's even to the point where the crowd is counting the number of suplexes. And by the time you get to the 10th suplex, that's just like, oh, okay, suplex.
Yeah.
Are you going to do more? And that's, I just find it bad. Logically, because all my nitpicks are logic, Monday night on Raw, Dean Ambrose comes to the ring with a wagon, collects all of his weapons. Tonight, he comes out, just walks down the rampway, and apparently he had stashed all of his weapons under the ring prior to the match. I would have liked to have seen him pull the wagon with the weapons, kind of like a New Jack did. I also would have liked to have seen a segment where earlier today, the officials are talking to Dean and trying to get the steps back that he stole on Monday night.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and, I mean, that probably would have been lame, but it would have bought into, you know, played off of what happened on Monday. Instead of everything kind of being self-contained, you bring it in. But the match itself, I mean, it was what it was. It was a Suplex City match. Dean was crazy. Dean loses. I don't think either guy was really helped or hurt by this match. I think everybody kind of stayed the same.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially for these two, what happens next, because I had a theory that obviously did not pan out once we get to the main event. Bottom line, I thought tomorrow night, or I guess tonight as you're listening to this on Raw, that Ambrose would walk out as the World Heavyweight Champion. And again, we have to wait and see what's going to happen. We're like I said, we're being critical, or you know, analyzing a show and not knowing what is next. But you know, that's kind of the way it works with the world of professional wrestling. I think, was Hell in a Cell next or the Women's Championship?
It was the Hall of Fame inductees and then the Women's title.
And earlier in the night, before the official show started, Lita came out and announced that the winner would become the first women, the first WWE Women's Heavyweight Champion. I don't know if heavyweight's the right word, but
Women's Champion.
Women's champion. A beautiful new belt. It's very similar looking to the current World Heavyweight title, smaller, and has a white strap instead. You've all watched WrestleMania, you know what it looks like. So, a good match. There were a couple of spots that, you know, kind of mistakes were made, but I'm not, you know, going to be nitpicky of that. Ric Flair was out there, which, of course, I love Ric Flair. Snoop Dogg escorting Sasha Banks, who's his cousin, to the ring. It makes me feel kind of bad for Becky Lynch because I feel like she has no one, you know, in that regard. So, and I said to you, or you said to me, we both agreed, though, that we kind of wanted Becky to win this one. Although any three of them winning would have been fine with me. But, you know, just because Becky didn't have the NXT Women's Championship, it would have been nice to see her kind of walk out as the WWE Women's Champion.
Yeah, I mean, I think this match, I think it would be between this match and the ladder match for match of the night.
Yeah.
I don't know if this lived up to the expectations. I would have to go back and watch it again just to see. But I think part of that was crowd reaction.
Yeah.
And it's, I was texting with a friend during the show, and I said the crowd seemed, I don't know if the crowd was not into it, but there were no catchphrases to chant at any of the three, other than the, you know, the typical woo, because I believe it was during the ladder match that you had commented, this has just become a catchphrase crowd. So I think the crowd was into it, but they just didn't, without having those catchphrases as crutches to fall back on, they don't know what to chant to show support.
Yeah.
So they're more silent. But yeah, I mean, it's not to speak negative about the generations that have come before, but I think this is easily probably the best women's match at WrestleMania.
Oh, definitely.
In the history. And it got plenty of time.
Yeah.
It told a good story. I was kind of surprised to see Charlotte retain, but I'm not disappointed. Yeah. And like I said, I'm curious to see where they go, and I think now we will get a proper Charlotte-Sasha feud, which I mean, in my opinion, I think maybe that should hold off until SummerSlam.
Yeah.
SummerSlam back in Brooklyn, where Bayley and Sasha had the NXT match. Or, you know, with Bayley losing the NXT title on Friday, maybe she shows up on Raw and comes after Charlotte. I don't know. But yeah, this was definitely a, if not the match of the night, second place, high standing.
And I think in general, triple threat matches are difficult to pull off because there's always, not always, but you have to get somebody kind of knocked out of there for a little bit to have the two on, or the one on one interaction. But I thought they did a good job incorporating, like with the, a couple of the times where they were doing the submission holds, all three women getting involved with that. So, yeah, kudos to them. They worked hard. They did a good job, and WWE, I think, finally gets it and did a good job giving them the time that they deserved to get out there and put on a good match.
Yeah. Now, as with everything, it's all in the follow-up.
Yeah.
Where do they go from here?
It wasn't the cool-down match like the Divas match typically or traditionally has been known to do. We went from that right into Hell in a Cell, which... No surprises here. I mean, I don't think it... We were expecting a big spot from Shane. Yeah, we got it. You know, I wasn't expecting a whole lot of, you know, it was going to be what it was. And, you know, I don't have a whole lot to say other than I'm glad Shane didn't die when he jumped off the top of the cage.
Yeah, I have a lot to say. So, when Shane brought his kids out to dance down the aisle with him, I wanted Undertaker to go at some point in the match over to where they were sitting in the front row and just punch him in the face, because...
God!
That would have made me... Not that I hate, you know, nothing against Shane's kids, and I understand it's child abuse, probably not going to work, but if you're going to bring your kids into the realm, they become fair game, at my point.
Holy cow!
I'm joking. I know, but this match, Shane spot the leap from the top of the cage to the table, called it before the match started, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's like the spot that we're looking forward to. So, several problems, and this is where my logic of the night really bugs me. This is a match where if Shane wins, he gets control of Raw.
Right.
If Taker loses, it's his last WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon has said the blood of Shane will be on his hands. Where's Vince McMahon? Where's any reinforcement of the stakes of this match, which I'm sure in the video package that played, it was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But to the live crowd there that can barely hear the thing,
right,
there was no, like, you know, this is for control. When you get into the match itself was slower than the Undertaker's entrance.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good match. I think because of the high spot and a few of the other big moments in the match, people will think it's a good match because they'll think of what, you know, was memorable. But everything else leading up to that, not that good. Shane loses the match, so now nothing changes going into Raw. So the last month is pretty much, and I could be wrong, Shane could come out on Raw and expose what he has holding over Vince. But right now, in the context of how this story has played out, the last month has been for naught.
Well, and I... Go ahead.
And here's... My feeling is this is where Austin, Michaels, and Foley could have been used. Each one of them has history with Vince McMahon and The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Austin has been saying on his podcast for the last year, something needs to change in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
That change could have come with Shane McMahon, even though, realistically, in front of the camera, things might have changed. Behind the scenes, nothing's going to change.
Right.
But it's that perception. Why didn't those guys come down in this match and help Shane win? That way, it's logical storytelling. You're not sacrificing your young talent. And Shane McMahon, and granted, if Shane beat Undertaker, I'm sure a lot of people would be complaining about, you know, Taker's legacy at WrestleMania and why is Shane winning. But if you're going to tell this story, to me, Shane winning was the logical choice.
Well, I agree with that, and I like that idea of bringing those three legends in for that. My thing is, I don't think Shane, you know, had any intentions of coming back full-time or even short-term. I think that they threw him into this match last minute because they didn't have anyone else for The Undertaker. And Jesus, people, quit chanting Sting Undertaker at the Hall of Fame. That's the other Hall of Fame thing. It ain't going to happen. Sting officially retiring now, but good Lord, in 2017, that would not be a good match, in my opinion. But anyway, yeah. I digress. Shane was a unique find. It was someone that it did throw some intrigue into the match, because you didn't know for sure if Shane was going to win and they were going to do this storyline with him taking over Raw. You know, I didn't want to see The Undertaker go out that way, so I'm glad he didn't lose. But at the same time, we need to start tying things up, I think, with his career. And I'm not knocking The Undertaker, but there's only so many more times we can watch him slowly plod to the ring.
Yeah.
Get in there, choke slam, tombstone, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3. And that's part of, you know, obviously there's a legacy there. He's a legend. But
the don't show must that go legacy on, by hanging around too long.
Exactly. Don't outlast your welcome, or don't outstay your welcome, as they say. What was it? What
the Battle Royal.
The Battle Royal. Oh, God. You know, I was excited when they moved the Battle Royal back to the...
main show.
The main show. We had gotten word that there was going to be somebody big in there. We speculated. Cesaro, we threw out there. Randy Orton. John Cena. I thought it was going to be John Cena or Randy Orton. Instead, it was Shaquille O'Neal.
And DDP.
DDP. Tatanka.
Tatanka was in there. Now, my problem with this match, and I don't know how it came off on television, 15 of the guys, somewhere around there, I don't even know how many people were in this Battle Royal.
Yeah, I don't know if there were 30 or not.
A large group of guys came out in a mass group.
Right.
No introduction until they got into the ring. And then even then, it was just, hey, here's the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. And then Big Show gets introduced. Mark Henry, Kane, DDP, and Shaq get introduced. So my thought is, well, obviously one of the people who got introduced is going to win this thing, because why else would you not, you know, why would you have guys that aren't introduced? That's not the way it went down, surprisingly.
Right.
And the guy who won was a surprise, because didn't expect him in there, not a member of the main roster, and there was nothing told to the live audience to get people prepared for him.
Right.
And that is, of course, Baron Corbin, fresh off of his
loss to Austin Aries
at NXT. I am not a Baron Corbin fan. I find him very...
I was going to say, my least favorite person from NXT winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royale.
Maybe... And this is where, hopefully, this year, third year they've done the Andre the Battle Royal, hopefully they have something planned for the winner.
Right.
Because the first two guys didn't do much afterwards.
Right.
Is Baron Corbin now on the main roster, or is that Andre title or trophy going to be hanging out in Orlando for the next year?
Right.
You know. Yeah, this match was... I would have liked to have seen because we were in Dallas and you had Diamond Dallas Page and Bo Dallas. I would have liked to have seen some type of interaction if you're going to have them. And again, it's going to be corny, it's dumb, but it's something. But yeah, this match was just kind of there.
Yeah.
And that's how it had been built up, as just, hey, we have guys that we don't know what to do with them. Let's stick them in this Battle Royal that we're going to start having every year on WrestleMania and not really build to it. I had predicted Mark Henry winning, because apparently he, you know, allegedly is going to retire this year. He's from Texas. This would have been a good send-off. But they chose to go a different way, which is fine in that regard. But again, you just throw a guy in there randomly, making his main roster debut. And
well, and I think that says too, you know, the lack of, you know, Cesaro winning it, we thought big things were going to happen from, they didn't. The Big Show won. The Big Show has been there, done that on everything in the WWE, so it made little to no sense. So Baron Corbin may be the year we finally see what this title, this not title, but this award, this honor, and trophy are going to mean for the overall big picture. Up next, The Rock came out to announce the attendance record, 101,000.
Well, first, the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders came out.
Yes.
Awesome. And then The Rock came out. I thought he had China's old rocket bazooka thing. Turns out it was a flamethrower, and he lit his name on fire, which I said is a proper analogy, or not analogy, but... metaphor for this show, because I thought the show was going down in flames anyway. And then The Rock announces a new WrestleMania attendance record.
101,763. And then it kind of all went
to hell?
To hell from there. The Wyatt family comes out, and of course, as soon as Bray's music hit, you knew it was not going to end well for Bray, because The Rock had posted on Instagram the day before a video of Kerry Von Erich, who of course is an icon in Dallas, doing his discus punch and basically The Rock said he was going to discus punch somebody. And unfortunately, it was like, okay, we know where this is going. We sat and listened to a promo, which the promo was great.
On Bray's part, yes.
Yes. Well, you know what, and here's where we're going to disagree. I like The Rock. I don't mind him coming back.
The problem is, kind of like we had discussed earlier, the problem is whenever Rock comes back, he cuts down the current crop, and he's left standing. And so he makes the guys that are there night in, night out look bad.
Yes, but I think also during the promo, he was building Bray up.
I mean, eventually he
cut him down, but... You know, yeah, I agree with that. You know, The Rock is, that's, I guess, part of his character. You know, he built him up, then cut him down. Then that's when the match
He said he was going to have a match against one of the members of the Wyatts. It ended up being Eric Rowan. The Rock won in 6 seconds, so...
Another new record,
and now you have, you know, even... I'm going to say further damage to the Wyatt family, and I know the way wrestling operates and the way wrestling fans' memory is, if WWE got behind the Wyatts tomorrow and wanted them to be credible challengers by SummerSlam, they could easily do it.
Sure.
But right now, you're just like, what? Why am I supposed to care about the Wyatt family? When Undertaker came in, you know... How many losses did he have in his first 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand different times, wrestling more matches, whatever. Bray Wyatt is supposed to be this big, you know, this cult leader, this eater of worlds, but how many feuds has he won? What is his, I don't want to say legacy, but what is his reputation when it comes to actually fighting and not talking?
Right. And, you know... I guess there's been reports that he is hurt, and that's why he didn't have a match at WrestleMania, because the original plan was supposed to be he against Brock Lesnar, or that was the rumor at least. So, Rock wins, the Wyatt family is of course upset, so they're going to attack him, and then cue the John Cena music.
Yeah, Cena makes his return, and we'll find out probably on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Is John Cena back from injury? Cena has said in interviews he's ready to come back. There was speculation that he may not be back till July, but that could have been planted just to throw people off.
Sure.
Well,
and The Rock said, welcome back. Yeah. But, you know, we don't know.
And it's nice to see The Rock and Cena have made up in the last 2 years, so they're all chummy and buddy-buddy. It was a nice surprise, but at the end of the day... Again, it just further discredits the Wyatt family and keeps the status quo the same.
Yeah.
And I don't know where this is going, and we've already seen the Wyatt family feud with John Cena. I'm curious to see what happens. I was not a fan of this segment for many reasons. One of the other reasons is this was approaching the 4-hour mark in WrestleMania, for the main show.
Right, right.
And I had heard that the show was going to run a half hour long anyway, so I kind of expected it, but the length of that coupled with the entrances for the next match made me think that the main event was going to be a lot shorter than it was. And I think on a show that was as full of stuff, as bloated as this show was, either the segment could have been, you could have done without the cheerleaders and The Rock lighting his name and just had him come out. It could have been shorter, but nice surprise to see Cena back.
Yeah, and time will tell, obviously, on that. The main event was next, Triple H defending the WWE World title against Roman Reigns. And we talked about this on the way back here. I think that just Triple H and the New Day got kind of the, and The Rock, of course, with the cheerleaders, but not a whole lot of different
entrances.
Big grand entrances. Triple H is, of course, very. I was impressed with. I liked the thing with Stephanie at the beginning, even though I'm not a big Stephanie fan. But this match, some people compared it to WrestleMania 25 with Triple H and Randy Orton.
I can see that. They're both in Texas. They both have Triple H.
I'm a bigger Randy Orton fan than I am Roman Reigns. I like Roman Reigns, and I, you know, the crowd pooped on him pretty much throughout the night, which that's their prerogative. They paid their tickets to be or their money to be there for their tickets and whatnot. You know, I think that fans are probably a little overly critical of Roman Reigns, but I also think at the same time WWE is trying to cram a guy down the WWE universe's throat that doesn't want him right now, at least. But then when he won, the crowd popped.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a minute. I just want to say, and I'll, because we try to keep this a friendly show, I will use internet abbreviation speak. FFS, whoever laid out this match should be fired on the spot. You have telling this story of two guys who hate each other, who have attacked each other backstage, who the animosity in this match should have been off the charts. What do they do? Triple H does his, you know, long entrance. Roman walks slowly down the ring. They circle each other. They move, I guess, in Undertaker speed. And the match goes on for, I want to say, between 25 and 30 minutes at least. This match should have been 15 to 20 minutes. Nonstop brawling. Attack. Do your finish like you have it planned. Like it. The finish actually woke the crowd up.
Yeah.
And as Kevin said, when Roman came out and when he was on offense throughout most of the match, the crowd booed him out of the building.
Yeah.
Which was to be expected. But then at other times, the crowd was dead silent almost.
Yeah.
And to me, I made the comment that the crowd was so apathetic to this match that they couldn't even muster up the energy to boo half the time. And then when the finish came, when Roman speared Stephanie and, you know, the final sequence came around, the crowd came into it. And when Roman won, it was like they forgot that they were supposed to boo him. And there seemed to be more cheers and sustained cheers. It wasn't like cheering that, you know, and maybe people were just cheering that the show was finally over. Because at this point, the show had ran almost 4 hours and 45 minutes. Those that actually got in on time were there for another hour and a half or so. Yeah. Way too long of a show. But I'm curious tomorrow, and obviously the Raw after WrestleMania is not the typical audience to judge by, so maybe next week see what the reaction to Roman Reigns is. But yeah, this match, I still think the WrestleMania 25 match was a worse match.
Mm-hmm.
But Roman Reigns is not, in my opinion, in the position to be in main event matches yet. He's still, and I'm going to take that back, because he is very much in the WWE pattern of, he's got his three signature spots, the drive-by drop kick, Superman punch, spear. But his problem is he works those in the same order. He doesn't know how to vary up. And no one's helping him, I guess, the agents, whoever's laying out the match. But this match was, I just think, atrociously planned.
Worst match of the night?
I'm going to go with either the main event or Shane Taker. I think both of them were coma-inducing at speed. You can watch them in fast-forward, and they're still slow.
Yeah. I agree. I either one of those two matches as well. What kind of letter grade would you give WrestleMania 32?
This is the hard part, because take off those two matches that we just complained about. All the other matches were perfectly fine, with the IC title and the women's match being very well.
Mm-hmm.
to me, the problem with story, and one point I want to make too is, I mentioned that there was no Vince McMahon during the show. There were no, with the exception of the segment backstage with Zack Ryder talking about winning the IC title, there were no vignettes, there were no sketches, mm-hmm. nothing on this show. And granted, I mean, you had a 4-hour and 45-minute show, and by my calculation, there was about 2 hours and 21 minutes of actual wrestling time. So that's still 2 hours and 20 minutes of entrances, post-match stuff, recap videos. It's just, I think it was missing something by not having those vignettes. And building, I guess, anticipation for matches. Letter grade, I would probably go C-, D-plus. I didn't think this, and I may have mentioned this at the beginning of the show, being there live is a different experience than watching on TV.
Sure.
And so being in this crowd of 101,000 people, I can't say that I was necessarily bored. I think I found things boring.
Right.
But the atmosphere helped
keep
it alive. If I was sitting at home watching this on TV, I probably would have turned it off, turned something else on, and came back to it later. I don't think this was a good show. And it makes me wonder about next year in Orlando. Are we going to get our streak going again, or...
Well, and we'll wrap it up with this, because there was a lot of people talking online. You know, WrestleMania is not going to hold up against NXT TakeOver. My opinion is, you're comparing, as Bobby Heenan used to say, ice cream to horse manure. It's two different shows, it's two different audiences, it's two different venues. Even though NXT falls under the WWE banner, there's a lot of differences between obviously what you're seeing on the main roster and what you're seeing on NXT. One of them being, WWE in general is oversaturation. You have 3 hours of Raw, you have 2 hours of SmackDown, you have main event, you have pay-per-views, you have all the other things that are going on. NXT, it's 1 hour a week. You don't see the same guys and the same gals every week. So I think part of it is that makes NXT and an NXT TakeOver so appealing is some of these people you've only seen a handful of times. And, you know, the other night, Nakamura, that was the first time he wrestled on NXT. Mm-hmm. Austin Aries, it was his first match on NXT. You know, how often do we see Asuka? Or
Asuka.
God, I can't say that. I'm sorry. You know, how often do we see, you know, weekly, week in, week out, do we see all these people? Whereas opposed to seeing John Cena week in and week out, and The New Day.
And seeing the matches that are billing
out
pay-per-view.
I mean, these guys all have interactions, and, you know, we hadn't seen Sami Zayn and Nakamura interact or have a match with each other, or we hadn't seen... Austin Aries and Corbin.
And even on the last NXT TakeOver special, Finn Balor took on Samoa Joe. But they haven't fought each other since that time. And they haven't been in there. Joe's, you know, he was in the triple threat with Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn. Mm-hmm. And then he was in the Iron Man, or the 55-minute match with Sami Zayn. It was building up without... putting those two together.
Right.
And that's something WWE main roster doesn't know how to do.
Yeah. So I don't think it's fair to judge them both on the same standards. I also think that NXT obviously is more wrestling. I mean, there's not... Chad talked about there not being any vignettes during WrestleMania per se, but NXT, it was just match after match. At least with WrestleMania, you did have The Rock come out and do his little spiel, which I think was a bit of a skit. And same thing, even though it wasn't really a skit, but it was kind of a break from the wrestling, was the Legends coming back and fighting the New Day, or fighting League of Nations. So,
And I do think that was one of the things that did hurt NXT, is it was just match after match. Like, there was no... time to catch your breath, or no downtime. It was just go. Of course, that show also went, I believe, about 2.5 hours.
Right.
As opposed to 87 hours that WrestleMania was. So.
Yeah, I think the pre-show for WrestleMania 33 actually starts this Thursday. So be sure to tune into that as well. We're kind of wrapping things up here. Yeah. We'll be at Raw.
We'll be at Raw. I'm curious to see what goes down, what happens. There's always usually a big surprise. WWE Network is actually doing a WWE 24 episode. It's a show on their network where they spend 24 hours looking at a certain aspect. They're doing a show on the post-Mania Raw because it has become such a big deal and probably the Raw of the year. And I was fortunate enough to be interviewed for that before the Hall of Fame. So whenever that comes out, I will be plugging it if I'm on the show. I'm curious to see where Raw takes us next on the next road to WrestleMania 33.
That's right. So be sure to tune in. Again, thanks for listening, sharing, downloading. My123Cents, the podcast. Also, check us out, my123cents.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Peace out. We'll talk again sometime soon.
And we made it to an hour.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.